Hello, Choicesters! Welcome to Choice Us Podcast. Thank you for making great choices and listening to Choice Us. I am your host, Christine Choi. You can find Choice Us on Apple Podcasts, Google Play, Spotify, and all the other places where you find podcasts. Be sure to subscribe, rate, and review the pod on iTunes, and you will get a gold star. An imaginary gold star, but still so special. This week, I talked to my lovely friend, Rhea Belmonte. She lives in California, but we recorded this interview here in New York while she was visiting. We talk about a lot in this episode. Rhea's tough upbringing, rebelling, making bad choices and going down the wrong path, being sent away to a boarding school in Mexico, being in awful relationships, and more. There were a lot of stories that I knew about, but a lot of stories that I did not know about. We talk in detail about many of the tools she was given in the program to cope with her hardships, and I found them to be really fascinating. Some seem to be very effective and helpful, and some, not so much. Okay, so Rhea and I met in our freshman year in high school in science class. Rhea shared with me of how she just remembers that I used to wear a lot of dark eyeliner in high school, which is kind of embarrassing, and also that we would always share hot Cheetos together. And I remembered how she used to cut her split ends off with scissors all throughout class, which oddly made me jealous of people with split ends, because I just happen to have really good hair and basically no split ends. So I guess grass is always greener. And here's a cool fact. We were neighbors in two different neighborhoods. In both neighborhoods, if you made a right out of my front door and then made the first right, it was Rhea Street. I'd like to think that it was the universe's way of connecting us to each other. Truly, if Rhea were a color, she would be glitter. You'll understand immediately once you start listening. She is so full of energy, light, and kindness. You would never imagine the kind of struggles that she faced and is still facing.
And some of the shit that she got herself into. So without any further ado, here's my interview with Rhea.
Hi, Rhea.
Yo, I'm from the streets of Brooklyn. Yeah.
What was your rap the other day?
I got one. I got a real one. You want to hear it? You'll like this. Cashing out motherfuckers that don't deserve it. Weighing out perp like we about to serve it. I stay laced in the back sipping on yak. I'm leaning. She's cheesing. We don't play hoes because we're too busy achieving. What you know about 3.6 GPA?
Okay.
That was my flow.
I
wrote that.
Totally love it. Okay, so we're going to play WWYD. What would you do?
What would you do?
You accidentally receive a confidential email about your manager about to be laid off. You know he's about to close on an expensive house. WWID.
Oh, goodness. I have two responses because there's two Rhea's in my brain. First response would be something of like rescuing this individual and trying to go save them from the horrible moment that is about to happen in their life. But I'm growing. New Rhea response would be, I would have to not be codependent and think this is his problem. There is nothing that I can do. I have no control because it's confidential. So I'm so sorry, boss.
Yeah.
New Rhea. I can't control the problem.
Great answer. And I also think it's the right answer.
Right.
Because really, I mean, because otherwise you're risking yourself.
Getting in trouble.
Yeah. First instinct is to be like,
rescue.
How do I direct that email to accidentally go to that person or something? Print it out and leave it out.
I might try to do that, but then no, it would like go back to you.
Right. It would go back to you. So I think that's a great answer. All right. We're going to jump right into Rhea's life.
Okay.
Take us to the beginning.
I did have a rougher childhood experience, unfortunately. So I was born into a family of a father that was a drug addict and a mother that was codependent dealing with his drug addiction. And they were not ready for this energy, this ball of Rhea at all. I was very needy and like almost like my needs didn't make sense. I didn't want to breastfeed. I pushed my mommy away. Mm-hmm. So I was a very, like, I had these needs, but I didn't know what they were. Yeah. So I was acting out very young. The farthest back I can remember is when I was 2 and I wouldn't say I love you to my parents. I think that was a way to control them.
Yeah.
So if I withhold my affection.
Wait, this is you remembering or you?
I remember this.
Whoa.
Very well. Okay. If I withhold affection, I get more attention.
Wow.
I learned that very young.
Yeah.
I was an only child, so I think that's why I have a lot of memories. I was like chilling with myself a lot. Mm-hmm. I don't really remember, like, being happy, which is very unfortunate. My parents were fighting every day. They divorced right when I turned 4. My dad, his drug addiction progressed. Cocaine is a hell of a drug, and he mixed it with heroin. Yep. Mm-hmm. So he got angrier and started being really abusive. And my mom didn't know what to do.
Yeah.
So the most powerful day of our lives is my mom came home. I was supposed to be in school. I wasn't at school. My dad was refusing to take me to school. And she was like, why aren't you at school? My dad was asleep. I said, Daddy hasn't been taking me. My mom looked very upset. Again, when you're a child, like, you don't know why this is happening to your life. You just know it's happening.
Right.
So mommy woke up daddy. And this was like a famous day that I don't remember, which is really interesting. Mm. But it's a very powerful day for my mom. He broke every mirror in our bathroom and the bathroom sliding glass door screaming and cussing. And when my mom ran out to the living room to see what I was doing and how this was, like, affecting me, apparently I was rocking back and forth, picking at the carpet. Like, I was not okay.
Oh, wow.
So this day is what empowered my mom to be the strong woman that she is. And she picked me up and she said, I'm getting you out of here. You are not going to be around this.
Oh, good.
And she said I was her strength.
Yeah.
So for herself, she was in that for 12 years.
Right.
But I'm the reason she got out.
Yeah.
She left that day. We were poor. She went to the accounts. My dad had took all the money for his addiction. She didn't know that.
Oh, damn.
She had to crawl with her tail between her legs to her parents, who were not proud because she married a Goya man. That means not Jewish. And they were very mad at her. So she had to beg for money for my grandpa. Life was really hard for like 4 years after that. I just begged to see my dad all the time.
Right.
I didn't understand, like, why she wouldn't let me, so I kind of hated on my mom. Mm. This would have been a great moment, I think, for all parents to let their kids know what's going on.
Yeah.
Kids do know.
But, like, how old are you at this point?
4.
Do you think, though, that you would have been able to comprehend that kind of
not the drug addiction part.
Right.
The drug addiction was really hard for me. I still don't grasp it. I keep asking, like, why couldn't you just quit the drugs for your child? The worth comes up a lot. Like, I wasn't worth that. That's very hard.
Yeah.
But it would have explained, like, her keeping him away from me. Yeah. I didn't get that. And it made me just hate on her. Mm-hmm. My dad would have episodes where he would, like, freak out on me when I would go visit him from guilt and shame, which shouldn't be on the 6-year-old little girl. So I also wouldn't want to call my mom because if I call her and tell her he's freaking out, and I won't be able to see daddy anymore. So again, all this shouldn't have been on me. This was all my responsibility to keep them from knowing what the other was done. And that should have not been going on. And I would like hide in the bathroom for a long time until he would calm down.
When were you allowed to go see him again?
From when I was 4 all the way until I was 12.
Okay.
But I would find a way to see him. So then I would take the bus as an 8-year-old. In Los Gatos to Santa Cruz because my mommy didn't want to take me.
Oh, damn.
My dad neglected me at the bus twice. One time was really bad. One time my dad nodded out when he was on drugs and, like, forgot.
Right.
The second time he was at work and it was just a mistake and there was no cell phones at the time.
Yeah, right.
So I walked up that hill in downtown Santa Cruz all by myself.
Yeah.
A lot. I do have to say that all these experiences made me very strong.
Yeah.
Young. My life got better. We had neighbors that moved in.
Uh-huh.
They're called the Cowans. They're the people that taught me what love is and family is and, like, being kind to one another.
Uh-huh.
We had never had dinners at home. I didn't even know that people did that.
Oh, wow.
So when I went to their house and they all had dinner together, I was tripped out by that. Yeah.
So that was, Oh, okay.
The first 8 years of my life were pretty just, like sad. And there wasn't a lot of good. It was just kind of sad.
And what was your mom doing at that point?
Oh, my poor mom. My mom was a single mother.
Yeah.
Trying to hustle money for our lives. And that was her energy all the time. Mm-hmm. So we were not connecting. She would ask me sometimes, like, are you okay through all this? And she says she made the mistake of believing me when I would say, yeah, I'm good.
Right.
Yeah. That was just a horrible time in everyone's life. My dad, my mom, mine. It was not a good time.
Yeah.
And it does kind of showcase you should stick together in some way, work it out.
Mm.
It doesn't mean you have to stay together.
Yeah.
But the idea of family, I think, is so important and just work it out. My mom was afraid to work it out with my dad.
Right.
They scream and fought. Their way is very New York. And I do have to say that versus California way. In New York, and especially coming from like the South Bronx, people talk a very specific way to each other. That's how they interact.
Mm-hmm. Did they meet here?
They met in Santa Cruz. And they're both from the South Bronx, which is very
funny.
Weird. Yes.
Okay.
And one's an Italian and one's a Polish Jew. It's just very opposite.
Yeah.
But yet the way they talk, they have that in common.
Yeah.
It's an abusive style. It's very like, you know, what the fuck is wrong with you? It's an abusive style. I kind of like it, but I've learned.
Yeah.
I have learned.
So then the family, the Cowans.
The Cowans moved in. Life got better. I was happy.
Mm-hmm.
I remember feeling joy because I was escaping from my home life and I actually had like a positive outlet.
Mm-hmm.
I have to say education was the worst outlet ever for negativity.
Mm.
This was a time that they didn't care about you unless you got straight A's. This is 20, how many years? I was five when you go into school. So 26 years ago, they did not praise you for being different, for being creative.
Right.
So I did not get self-esteem from my education at all, and I really get sad when I say that.
Mm-hmm.
I didn't get self-esteem until I made friends.
Yeah.
That's where I feel like I flourished. I got positive attention and the friend energy. I feel like I had to do it that way.
Mm-hmm.
I didn't get it in school. I wasn't getting it at home. I wasn't good at sport.
Mm-hmm.
So I was really struggling with finding like why I love myself. I was really struggling with that. So then when the Cowans moved in, life was beautiful and fun. My dad was still having episodes. But again, like the trauma seems less when you have an outlet. When you have somewhere positive to go, it doesn't bug you as much.
So were you just like going over to their house
every day.
A lot?
Okay, I kind of like lived there. Bethany, the sister, used to fight for me. So like their parents wouldn't let me spend the night sometimes and would send me to a dark home by myself because my mom was always working.
Oh.
Bethany one day came home with me and was like, this is what you do. Like, you're by yourself and you like put yourself to bed. And I'm like, yeah. And she threw a fit and hid me through the garage and snuck me in through the window for years.
Oh.
3 years. So I love that.
And how old was she?
Young. We talk about this. 16 is when I met Bethany, I feel like.
You were 16.
She was. So I feel like during this time when she was like sneaking me through the window, she was like 18.
And you were 8?
I was 8. Aww. 8 to 10. Yeah. I thank her for that. Because she went against her parents.
Do you still talk to her?
Yes.
Oh.
I watch Bethany's children. She lives an hour from me.
Oh.
Isn't that like really, it makes me cry, really special?
Yeah, that's awesome.
She still says, I'm her sister. I never had siblings, so that's really important to me.
Hmm.
I'll say, I'm Bethany's best friend, Rhea. She'll correct me. No, you're my sister.
Oh, that makes me want to cry.
It's really special. And she knows I needed it. Like, I really don't. I needed that. So I'm like, oh, yeah. So I do still see Bethany. We're like this. Still very soul connected.
Yeah, I love that.
She was like a second mom for sure. And my mom's amazing. But my mom emotionally couldn't be there.
Yeah.
I have to be real. I was definitely getting angry.
Yeah.
I was watching people have their dads at events and I didn't.
Mm-hmm.
And that's where you start the resentment. Why don't we have family dinners? These were my questions. Why aren't we ever together? Like, even though they're divorced, I don't get why they weren't instilling family in my life. Yeah. Life was pretty good for a minute. I was doing so bad in school. I really struggled in school because I couldn't sit still.
Yeah.
Teachers and me were like fighting every year. I hated my teacher.
Yeah.
It caused me to act out more and more. I look back and I really just wanted praise and attention. But wasn't getting it.
Right.
Yeah. Then, like, we hit junior high. My dad moved to New York, which was a blessing.
Oh.
It really was. It was hard on me.
Yeah.
But I got away from all the abuse for a little bit.
Mm-hmm.
My dad wasn't physically abusive ever. He's just very, very, very emotionally and mentally abusive to you. So I got away from that in my mind, kind of out of sight, out of mind. Like, you don't deal with it. But those issues, the daddy issue, and I have them so bad.
Yeah.
Came back and manifested in my first relationship with a boy.
Yeah.
I was desperate. I have felt that feeling as a woman of wanting to be accepted so bad by a man. I wish I was aware of that need when I was in 7th and 8th grade because the things that I would do, like just following like them home, like just issues.
Expand on that.
So I liked a boy.
Mm-hmm.
He ended up living around the corner from me, from us. I would totally, like, follow it to see if he would notice me. Mm. Like, so I would be behind him trying to act like I have a life.
Yeah.
But I don't have a life. my life is getting attention from this boy.
Right.
I had no interests, no hobbies. I wasn't good at school. Mm-hmm. So this is where my self-esteem started to go, and this is not good. His last name was with an A and mine was the B. So we in PE, we were next to each other. Yeah. And that's when he noticed me. And we have actually a really good friendship. Now we're cool. Yeah.
Oh, that's good.
It wasn't sexual at the time. Yeah. I was not sexual at that age. I wasn't even like aware of that.
Right.
He, I think, wanted sexual stuff. And I was like, let's be best friends.
Right.
There, my needs were being neglected again. Kind of. And I was going out for his acceptance really bad.
Yeah.
In lots of really negative ways.
Were you guys boyfriend, girlfriend at?
Yes. He asked me in a note to be his girlfriend. I avoided him for 3 days. We're all like eighth graders now. Okay. We're big shit in
school. We're big 13-year-olds now.
Yes. And so I avoided him and that really hurt his feelings. And this was the beginning of I saw how I have issues.
Why were you avoiding him?
To get my way. I thought that if I avoid him, he will want me more.
Yeah.
And then if I like ignore him, he's going to chase me. And I don't know why I wanted that so bad.
Yeah.
He did chase me and I liked it. And then I felt validated and needed and wanted. And so I was like, okay, I'll be your girlfriend. Mm. In eighth grade, I have to say, my boyfriend at the time did not make me feel wanted or desired or loved. And I was acting out a lot. That's kind of when the acting out started to get bad.
Yeah.
I always clearly wanted some sort of attention.
Yeah.
But it turned to negative.
Right.
I wasn't getting positive no matter what I did.
Yeah.
So I decided I'm not going to care about the world. This is like really conscious. Yeah. I was like, I don't care about anything.
Yeah.
Because that way you don't get hurt. So I tried pot for the first time. Mm-hmm. Weed was one of my saviors and curses. It's a savior because it's a great anti-stressor if you can find the right strain. And I smoked pot and my boyfriend at the time was playing games with me. And he broke up with me. I smoked pot for the first time. This was normal. He broke up with me all the time.
Yeah.
So I smoked pot and I was like, oh my God. I'm not thinking about him. And this was a good, bad correlation.
Right.
I even told my friends, like, I just need to smoke pot and I won't think about him. Mm. That's when that addiction, little mental addiction started. And it was funny. My boyfriend at the time one day asked me, do you like weed or me more?
Ooh.
I said weed.
Wow.
I meant that.
Yeah.
Yeah. By this point, I'm kind of unhappy again.
Yeah.
My boyfriend, the person that I kind of put on a pedestal and gave all my worth to, isn't cutting it.
Yeah.
I wasn't aware that I should not give him all that. So, I was just unhappy.
Right.
What do you do when you're unhappy? Try to make yourself feel better by any means. Mm-hmm. So, I started stealing. Mm-hmm. I mean, I haven't stolen since I was 15 years old, but oh my God, that can be an addiction. Yes.
Oh yeah.
The mentality that I got one over on you
empowers
you if you feel low about yourself. It starts in department stores. It does not start on people.
Oh, and it moved on to people.
I moved on to people and that was an even bigger rush.
Right. Okay.
A very dirty feeling.
Right.
You think it feels good because you just feel so shitty about yourself. Anything makes you feel good.
Yeah.
But when I look back on that feeling, my stomach churns. Like, it is a very ugly feeling. You're getting off on hurting people. It's not a good feeling.
So what were you doing? What were you stealing?
So it started out of mom's wallet. Sorry, mom. Mom knows this. It started out of mom's wallet. Then it moved to my friend's parents' wallet. Oh, and they know this as well. And we're like all cool now. Then it turned into our first break-in of a house. Mm. Our neighbors left the door open. I mean, open. Me and my friends were sitting there watching this go on. We were just people watching at the time. We didn't think about it. We were harboring a fugitive at the time who knew how to rob houses.
Wow.
We're sitting on my porch smoking weed. We ran out of money for more weed. Yeah. It was 4:20. This matters in the story. So let me explain why we thought it was meant to be. Our fugitive friend was like, that person just left their door open. Let's go in.
Yeah.
And we were like, okay. Yeah. We didn't think of how evil that was, how disrespectful that was at all. There was no thought of that. We get in and it was the most exhilarating thing of my life. We stole nothing important.
Yeah.
You're stealing things like erasers, like really cute erasers. $33 in quarters.
Oh my God.
Perfume. What made it addicting or what made us think we were meant to do it and why this continued was because the last moment a friend of mine opens the bottom drawer and sees a bunch of money and we grab it and we don't talk and we just leave. We get home in my room and we count the money It was $420. This convinced us that we found our calling card.
Oh my God.
I swear, we were all like, this is meant to be.
Yeah.
One day it was gone. Oh, on ecstasy and weed.
Wow.
Yeah, we were not winning in life. Okay, so now I'm robbing houses and I'm acting out really, really bad. Then turned into a regular thing. We stopped going to school.
Wow.
My house was the party house, so it made it easy. Mm-hmm. My mom was never home. I had the single mom. So my house was the go-to house for fights, anything, for doing drugs, anything, which didn't help my situation.
Right.
To be real, I got arrested at school. Note to everybody, you do not want to get arrested at school. I told the police lies, which made my story worse. They ended up taking me and my friend in the back of the cop car. Because we had lied so much, they couldn't trust us anymore.
Right.
They wanted us to go around and point out houses that we were robbing.
Wow.
That was a bad day.
But how did they get you to do that?
There was a professional burglar robbing houses at the same time as us. He was stealing things like jewelry. We weren't that smart.
Yeah.
We're not that smart. I had 8 Razor scooters in my backyard.
Oh, how funny.
I was just stealing very childlike stuff.
Yeah, because you're a child.
Because I'm a child. And it showed, like, I was acting like an adult. I was, but I was such a child.
Yeah.
Yes. Like, so because of that, and then because I lied,
yeah,
they could not pinpoint the houses I had burglarized.
Right.
Each house is a felony. So they couldn't charge me with correct info. So when they had us drive around pointing at houses, me and my friend were lying again. Didn't learn our lesson.
Yeah.
This caused the officer to peg me with 28 felonies of residential burglary that day.
Holy shit.
My friend only got 4.
Whoa.
They called me the ringleader. This was not true. Like, I swear, it was all
us.
Yeah. I was the ringleader. I was the bad one. It was really weird. They handcuffed us to a table, me and my best friend. We forever remember this. Something really inappropriate happened. I don't think should be happening at all, no matter what. I was crying, handcuffed to the table, waiting for my mom. So was my friend. We were in so much trouble. We just got fingerprinted.
Uh-huh.
We were talking a lot of shit to the officers. I feel like we were getting to them. But at one point, my thong was sticking out of my pants. That was very cool in that day.
Yeah.
And the officer snapped my thong. And that made us cry even more. We felt very violated. We stopped talking after that. We were like in shambles.
What the hell?
I felt violated. I knew what it felt like to feel violated. I told my mom right away.
Oh, wow.
She tried to press charges. It didn't work. They don't care. And that made me not trust the officers. So now I don't respect the law. Now Raya has gone off a new deep end where I don't care about police officers, which is not good.
Yeah.
Then I have a probation officer and I didn't care about her.
Right.
I didn't care what she could do to my life. I didn't care about anything because I kind of had this unspoken willingness to not be here anymore.
Yeah. And this is all still freshman year.
I'm 14 still.
Yeah.
My mom and I were screaming at each other the entire ride home and I ran away from home. Yeah. For 2 days.
Yeah.
I came back when I needed a shower.
Yeah.
Then my mom called the cops on me again.
Wait, your mom called the cops on you?
Yes. My mom a snitch, yo.
Oh, wait. Your mom called the cops on you the first time?
Second time.
How did you guys get in trouble the first time?
People were going to report that the burglaries were happening during school. There was a case being filed and investigated on someone from Lynbrook robbing houses because of the fugitive's fingerprint. They had those in the system. There were 4 kids seen coming out of a house. I was one of them.
Damn.
The fugitive really gave it away. I never realized I was harboring a fugitive. I had a friend that had escaped from CYA, which is called California Youth Authority. Yeah. It's when the government doesn't want you. So, like, you're such a bad kid that the system does not want you. The jails don't want you. They put you in CYA. It's basically adult prison for, like, 14-year-olds.
Damn.
So he escaped. That's what got us in so much trouble.
Yeah.
He was in the system already. I was expelled from the entire district, meaning I couldn't go anywhere unless I moved to Fremont. So that was an issue. My mom didn't know what to do with me. Then came the kicker. I stopped going to school entirely. I was supposed to go to school, get good grades, stop hanging out with the people I got arrested with. It's a law. And get sober.
Mm-hmm.
I ended up using more drugs. I ended up literally not going to school at all. Being with the friends that I shouldn't be. Basically, if I had done this, I could get some of the felonies dropped. I could work it with my lawyer. But I wasn't caring at that point. I kept telling people I wanted to die at 18 or go to jail.
Jeez, yeah.
I talked about death a lot. I wasn't like suicidal. It was weird. I just had this willingness to leave the earth.
I mean, because you weren't seeing much self-worth.
Right. What you just said is really valuable to me. Yeah. I feel like you got me. Mm-hmm. I feel like a lot of people, they'll hear like a victim. And I'm not trying to come like that. It's just the way you feel.
Yeah.
As a child, I felt like I had no place.
Yeah.
Why would I? I'm not good at school. I'm not good at sports.
Yeah.
Boys and me, I have no dad at any of the events. I just really didn't get why I was here.
Yeah.
I would ask my mom, like, why do you need me here? Like, a lot. And that would upset her.
Yeah.
Because I'm her reason for everything good in her life.
Right.
You can imagine our relationship. Horrible.
Yeah.
We loved each other, but the relationship was, like, really ugly and clashing all the time. So I'm her what for? And I feel like I should die.
Right.
My mom, I should say, was a very, I should say what she was doing. She was making it big in the success world. She finally, when I was 8 years old, so 4 years after the divorce, started making over $50,000 a year. She said, that's when we could get McDonald's. Then it turned into $60,000 and then it was $75,000. And then she was like, oh my gosh, we have money now. Like, we can like buy a house. And I look back. It makes me cry. I wish I appreciated the strong woman that my mom was.
Yeah.
A lot of women go after men for child support. My mom didn't.
Yeah.
She said, your father beats himself down enough. And I just give her so much respect for doing it like all on her own.
Yeah.
All. And it was horrible. I would tell any female out there, I get why you do go after child support. What we went through was horrible.
Yeah.
Yeah, we didn't have food. So, like, yeah, like, I'm not negating, and I totally get why women do.
Yeah.
I just wish I made it easier on my mom, because I was, like, a nightmare child.
Yeah.
I do live with regret in that way. I really, really do. I'm working through that.
Yeah.
Or at that time, my poor mom brings me to my last probation meeting before court. This is the big meeting. Like, I'm supposed to be, like, showing what I did so that basically I can get off scot-free. Like, all I gotta do is follow these rules.
Oof, yeah.
I just kept getting worse.
Yeah.
That was probably one of the worst days ever. I spit in the probation officer's face.
Oh, man.
I said, like, fuck you, fuck off. My upbringing came out big time right there. Who the fuck are you? Oh, it was
bad.
She escorted me out of the office.
Oof.
Oh, she called my lawyer. I was in trouble.
Yeah.
I kept, like, pushing her buttons with the, like, do your worst attitude.
Yeah.
My mom noticed this and was terrified, and I'm so glad she was. My mom was like, something is wrong with my child.
Yeah.
All of our other friends that had a similar attitude were scared of getting in trouble. And I was so defiant. Something was wrong. So my mom started researching boarding schools behind my back, yo.
Damn.
One day, I get woken up by two strangers. 8:30 in the morning, exactly. My clock was right there.
Yeah.
And this is what you remember on a traumatizing day, these weird, like, moments. They told me I need to get dressed and to come with them. That was it.
That's crazy.
It's crazy. So I get up. I'm walking out. I see my mom pacing back and forth outside in the backyard. I go like this. What the? And as I do that, they like restrain me.
Oh, shit.
And I'm like, really? You're going to let them do this to me? Like, so angry.
Yeah.
They take me out to the car. My mom tries to come in the car. And that's when I physically tried to fight my mom. That was the first time I had ever done that. I did hit my mom. They immediately pulled me away from her.
Yeah.
It took us 4 years to be able to talk about this day. This day was hard.
Yeah.
Yeah, I loved my friends. That was my only sense of self-worth at the time, and I was ripped away from it, so it was very hard for me to, like, identify. I don't know where I'm going yet at all. They don't tell you.
But you had an idea, no?
I was a little in denial, I guess, about how bad I was. I just thought, what? Like, I was in shock.
But, like, you did realize that your mom had set these people up to take you somewhere?
No. They do this on purpose, so they like to lie to you. They told me I would be out in 3 months. I could call my boyfriend when I get there. I could da 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 da.
Yeah.
You get there. You have no idea you're in Mexico. They blindfolded you.
That's so crazy, yeah.
When you're in Mexico, that's when I learned a very humbling lesson in my life. So let's go back to me being a child and I'm allowed to talk very, like, fuck you, shut the fuck up energy. I start talking like that in Mexico. Immediately, I get restrained. And I'm very smart at this time about the government. I'm very anti-government, so I know certain things. Get your hands off me. You can't touch a child. I'm an American child. Da, da, da. I'm, like, saying stuff. They straight look at me, and they dig harder. They put their knee into your back, and, like, your chin is getting cut up from the cement floor.
Oh,
they
don't give up. Yeah.
And you're like, ow, ow, like, I'm bleeding. And they go, you're in Mexico, little girl. And right when they said that, I know.
Yeah.
That's why they're able to restrain me. They can physically harm me entirely.
Yeah.
There is no rights for me right now.
Right.
I shut up immediately. I remember I was so terrified. You have zero rights. So, like, they don't care about my sadness. Starve me. Put me in a room. Like, it's fine.
Damn.
They put me in worksheets, which is an empty room where you stare at a wall and listen to tapes in Spanish for 8 hours.
Spanish for 8 hours?
Yeah.
Do you speak Spanish?
Sí, yo puedo hablar español muy bien. Pero yo hablo como una gringa.
Yeah, you do.
The first thing you learn is puedo. Can I? Uh-huh. Because you need to ask for permission for everything. It's puedo ir al baño. Podamos ir al baño. Another thing you learn right away in this program is you can never talk without a third. You have to have three people in a conversation all the way until you leave that program.
Wow.
Ready for the quote? It's harder to get three people to run away than two. That's why.
Yeah.
I faked my program right away because of the fear. I was afraid and I wanted freedom again. And you don't get freedom unless you do what they say.
Right.
I did want to change.
When did that come about?
I had a very interesting experience. They put you in seminars. I was open to it.
Yeah.
They basically bring up all your issues. So they turn out all the lights and they get you in touch with them. Mm-hmm. Remember, I was living in a way that I was not in touch with any pain.
Yeah.
Only anger.
Right.
I was very disconnected from the fact that I had pain.
Yeah.
When they got me in touch with the pain, I immediately started crying. I didn't even know I cried. They were like, I want you to remember the person that was never there for you. That's how it starts.
Oof.
And of course, like my dad pops in. Yeah. And then like, I want you to remember that moment where they ruined you.
Jesus. Yeah.
Oh my God. And then when they put you in touch with it, finally they go, and now I want you to beat the shit out of that memory. Honestly, it's so healing.
Mm-hmm.
We like to act like anger is bad. I don't think anger is bad at all. I just think we need to know as humans how to work with it.
Yeah.
Beating the shit out of a moment where you were powerless is one of the most healing times.
Like what?
They give you a towel and they have you start beating the floor.
Okay.
Like the moment my dad forgot my 10th birthday and I'm sitting there waiting. I'm waiting in front of all my friends to show off my daddy to blow out the candles.
That's your 10th. Okay.
And that was the worst birthday.
Yeah.
So that moment is very, very powerless. I couldn't control my dad. I couldn't make him be there for me. No matter what I said to him, he didn't care.
Yeah.
And that's a very powerless feeling. It makes you feel like I'm fidgeting. Like, it makes you so mad. Like, why couldn't you just be there?
Yeah.
So they allow you to let your anger out.
Yeah.
That's kind of what I mean by, like, teaching you how to deal with it. Like, you're allowed to be upset.
You were saying how that transition for you was when you were thinking more about the sadness rather than the anger.
Yeah.
Right? So how did that, like, how and when did that translate into anger sadness?
Again. When they bring up the memory, you immediately go into the pain.
Yeah.
The facilitator gets you to this point.
Yeah.
It's what they're saying, and they do this, like, guided thing.
Yeah.
That triggers the sadness, not the anger.
Yeah.
And they get you so in touch. You're hysterical. You're kind of losing your mind.
Yeah.
You are not okay. In that moment, you are that 4-year-old or that 10-year-old. You're back there, and you're not okay. So at first you're sad, but then she guides you to the anger.
Yeah.
What did you do when that happened? Where did you change?
Yeah.
What did you decide about yourself from that moment? And she wants you to say it, like, that I'm worthless, or like that I have no value. And then she's like, all right, I want you to, like, remember that feeling. Remember that. And that's when she starts to, like, we're going to, like, let it out. And it did. It, like, helps you.
Yeah.
You're beating that memory for, like, a half an hour to an hour. As long as you need.
Yeah.
You know, I just had a neglected dad. When I see, like, the people's anger from what they went through in their rape or their molesting, like, that was so hard.
Oh, yeah.
Then they kind of calm you down. Like, again, this is all guided. I am being, like, brainwashed in a way, but it was so helpful.
Yeah.
I thought, oh, that happened to you. Get the fuck over it. Why are you crying? You're being a little bitch. Like, this is how I thought. Get over it. And then you just become this angry little person. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Wait, how long are you there?
2 years. And that was my first month. You do a seminar every month. Part of this whole program that I'm in is restating your language. They really want to revamp who you are, your music, your language, the way you dress. It's called your image.
Yeah.
Your image is what's been protecting you from all these things.
Okay.
They want to shed you of that. So immediately, no shoes, no makeup, no plucking eyebrows, no shaving legs.
Whoa.
You are a hairy female. You have to embrace that.
Yeah. Are you guys separated?
Guys and girls are separate entirely.
Okay.
The only time you see guys is seminars.
Okay.
That's it. You are free to heal without men around.
Yeah.
Yeah. And it's helpful.
I bet. How often are you talking to your parents?
Oh, not at all.
Not at all.
You're not allowed to talk to your parents at all.
Okay.
You get one phone call a week if you're good.
And were you good?
Yeah, not the first 2 weeks. I didn't want to talk to my mama anyways. Yeah,
right.
Yeah.
True.
I did write her a hateful letter that she still keeps.
Oh, my God. Just needs to remind you.
You have no contact with the outside world. It's they have to be on an approved list. Your parents have to.
Oh, okay.
And me and my mom weren't even talking, so that wasn't going well for
me. Right, yeah.
This did beat me into changing.
Okay.
It's kind of like being in jail, only way worse. I'm sorry. Yeah. Way worse. In jail, you can write your friends.
Yeah.
In jail, you can play cards. We were not allowed to play cards.
Yeah.
In jail, you can talk without a third.
Right.
You have freedom of speech in America. Yeah. So I think jail is better than where I was.
Yeah, okay.
At this point, I'm going through the motions where I admitted I am wrong. Something that I am doing is wrong.
Yeah.
Yet, I still blame everybody else. That's the phase of change that I was in.
Okay.
I'm wrong, but you need to stop. That was my thing. I was growing at that time. Then we go to seminar 3, which is called Focus. Focus really sheds you of your image. It really gets you in touch with who you really are. What they ask you a lot in the program is, okay, I don't care about your music. Who are you?
Yeah.
That's what they ask you.
Okay.
And then you go, I like Eminem. I like...
Right.
No. That's your... I don't care. Pretend that you're on an island and you don't have anything. Who are you? It proves the point. I don't know who the fuck I am.
Right.
It really gets you in touch with who you are. So then I was more in touch with my image as a stoner white girl. Skater, rocker. And I was like trying to shed that. Why do you want to be seen as a stoner is part of the context. And well, it gets me attention. What kind of attention? Positive. That was where I got positive attention.
Yeah.
Why do you want to be seen as a rocker? Because rockers don't give a fuck. Why do you want to be seen as that? Because I don't give a fuck.
So then what was like kind of the end product of who you were after that?
It's called an I am statement.
Process. Okay.
I am a strong, lovable, important, worthy young woman.
Say it again.
I am a strong, lovable, important, worthy young woman.
I love that.
It gives me goosebumps every time I say it. They make you say it in front of like hundreds of people with your bushy eyebrows and your like own who you are.
Yeah.
It's very, very powerful. I was really changing then, kind of. Hear me out.
Yeah.
I got to level 4, which is a big deal. Level 4 means I can pluck my eyebrows.
Okay.
Took me 8 months.
Yeah.
I can actually go off grounds with my mom.
Oh, okay.
Once a month.
Yeah.
I get phone calls twice a week.
Nice.
Yeah, level 4 is a big deal. Oh, you can walk around the vicinity by yourself. So before this, we're in line 24/7.
Yeah.
Head counts are normal.
Yeah.
You're a number. Then you kind of have some identity again. You kind of feel like they are going to trust you with taking on like a new image.
Yeah.
But they'll call you out. Every day you have feedback from 3 people in group.
Mm.
You go like this. Christine, can I share my experience with you?
Okay.
Something that I got as feedback is you use the DITS Act to get attention.
Oh, shit.
And that hurts to hear.
Yeah.
Yeah. You play stupid. My experience of myself when I'm around you is I feel dumb. That didn't help me.
Yeah.
When feedback doesn't help you, there's a saying, if it doesn't apply, let it fly.
Yeah.
But we do feedback here.
Yeah.
It does give you really tough skin. I'm very open to like criticism now. I don't even care. But this is all part of you going home. So if you're getting feedback like that in group, your case manager hears. She's going to call you in. And this is all over some bitch that didn't like you earlier because you wouldn't share your pudding.
Yeah.
Casa Bay, this consequences were cat ones, cat twos, cat threes, cat fours, cat five. Cat one is biting your nails.
Mm-hmm.
If you get a cat one, you fill out a consequence. On one side, it's what pattern was driving you. On the other side, what are you going to do differently so that that pattern doesn't drive you? Why was I biting my nails? When I know it's a rule. What was running me is like the I don't care attitude.
Mm-hmm.
I don't care, and why does it matter? And then on the other side would be, what am I going to do differently? So it makes you very aware of yourself. The next time the I don't care comes up for me, I'm going to tell a friend. And hopefully the friend can help me out of it for now.
Mm-hmm.
For now, until I develop that myself, because I don't have self-restraint yet.
Yeah.
So this was an amazing program in terms of like accountability,
responsibility.
I definitely know how to do both. The issue with it now in my 30s that I'm definitely seeing is because I was already in a very verbally abusive, attack, shameful home.
Yeah.
I basically took the program's jargon and turned it into attacking myself. So I'm really struggling with that lately. The program kind of taught you like you're accountable for everything.
Right.
You have exactly what you intended. All these sayings that put it on you.
Yeah.
I think that there are times when you're not doing anything and right. shit just happens.
Which would be good for kids who act out because they were given everything and all they did their lives was blame other people.
Right.
Right. And that would be a really good program.
I think that would be, and I think that those kids helped a lot.
Yeah.
3% was the success rate because Damn. Of the harsh not being able to communicate. Like, that was very cruel okay. to us. I know why they were doing it, but we're taken right. from everything. It was very cruel.
But these seminars, I mean, they really do sound really helpful in kind of letting out your inner demons, you know?
I thought they were really helpful.
Yeah.
I didn't know a lot of things that I was so self-righteous right. about. And taking accountability helps so many of my friendships. It really does. Mm-hmm. Like, just being able to say you're sorry for your part.
Yeah.
And you're sorry that you didn't think of the time and you didn't care. You know, to know yourself right. that way is yeah. awesome. Yeah. So that program really helped with that. So I'm on level 4. I'm getting privileges.
Yeah.
And I blow it. I have a great learning moment. I have regularly glorified drugs.
Oh, okay.
Specifically weed and ecstasy. I still struggle with that. That is not allowed. That's a Cat 3.
Okay.
Meaning you lose, you're in big trouble. You don't just get a consequence. You get a consequence on top of you're going to lose all your privileges, on top yeah. of getting to level 2 probation, which sucks. You get no phone calls, yeah. no makeup, no off privileges. You're in trouble for 2 weeks.
Yeah.
I did often glorify drugs. So if I'm taking accountability and responsibility, I did often do that. However, this particular day, Gabby was glorifying drugs, not me. Mm. And Gabby was talking about alcohol. I don't drink. Like, yeah. I really don't. Yeah. It was not my drug choice. It never has been. So I got dropped for saying, I didn't say this. Oh, I love martinis with double olives, something like that. I didn't say it. I was so mad about
Damn,
it.
Damn, yeah.
The lesson that it taught me was this. You might have not said it then, but if you're really taking accountability, Rhea,
yeah.
do you say that stuff?
Yeah.
Yes, I do. Should you be saying that stuff? You're trying to get clear-headed. Why are right. you like glorifying is different than talking about it. Glorifying is yeah. like, let's go do it. So I really looked at that. And yeah. that was when I went to a seminar. There were no accidents.
Yeah.
That's another saying from the program. On addiction.
Yeah.
Once you get to upper levels, they're different. They're not the same seminars that Focus and Discovery are. They're like uh-huh. these different. They're random. They're on topics that the facilitator feels like you should learn about.
Okay.
So you don't know what they're going to be on.
Okay.
So when it was on addiction, it was that day that he said this. The facilitator said this and it stuck with me very hardcore. And I still am going through this in my own life. Marijuana. He said that. And of course, everyone looks like that yeah. catches everyone's attention because everyone loves weed. I mean, and we all look at him and he's like, it's not a bad drug. It's really not. And yeah. when you're saying this, you're like, right? Like, right?
Yeah.
Like, can I go back to weed?
Right.
That's what you're thinking. And he goes, and you know, it can help lots of different things, but here's the problem. You'll know you're an addict, whether if it's weed, whether it's other drugs, you'll know if you're counting down the next day that you get to smoke it again.
Yeah.
Guess what I had in my journal? A countdown.
Yeah, bet.
When he said that, I had a relationship moment with myself. I didn't tell everyone right away.
Yeah.
You know, I just sat there and was like, you're a liar, Rhea. Like, you are. You're a liar. You're not honest about what you're preaching. And you don't like yourself because of it. And you need to get real.
Hey, yay. Okay.
So I told everybody. I told myself. I showed the countdown to the mama.
Yeah.
The head mama. And then.
Yeah.
And I told her I have a weed addiction and people laugh at it.
Yeah.
And everyone laughed. And I'm like, yeah, it may just be weed, but I am like, you should see me. I am addicted.
That truly might be the first time I've ever heard somebody say they're addicted to weed.
Very mentally, yeah. extremely.
And I think it's not the drug you're addicted to. It's really the mind. Mental. Yeah, the mental.
I call it the mental obsession.
Yeah.
You obsess like a weirdo. Like you can stay up all night thinking about it.
And like you said, it kind of gets rid of your pain. So that's what you're addicted to, the forgetting of the pain.
You get it.
Yeah, it's not the high. It's
not the high
yeah.
at all. It's the it's real addiction. Like, yeah. I'm a true addict. Yes. Yeah. I don't persevere through my feelings. I want to not feel them.
Yeah.
Then I really wanted to be clean. Like, from that moment on, I really, like, cared and wanted okay. to be clean. Yeah. I really did change. Like, in that moment,
yeah,
new person.
Wow.
I had to admit that to myself, that I really am an addict, that I am my father. Whoa. That's what it was at that yeah. time. That I hated him so much, yet I became him. And anger and drug addiction in yeah. every way. So that was very interesting. You know what that also taught me? You're not supposed to hate people or hurt you. In the hatred, you're going to become them. Because you hate it so much, you're not noticing that you're becoming it.
That's, yeah.
To stop evil, you risk awakening the same evil within yourself.
That's
very powerful.
Yeah.
It doesn't mean you're healing when you hate somebody at all. This has also brought me to realizing that my dad is not good for me, which is so painful to say. I love my daddy. Your dad is your dad. Your mom is your mom. If you have any sort of connection to them, they're your parents.
Yep.
There are certain things that my dad instilled in me, which is my love for animals, my love for horror and movies and TV, my love for being active and hyper, and my love for doing any kind of adventure. Mm-hmm. My dad instilled all that in me. So it was hard to say that he's bad for me.
Yeah.
He's really bad for my emotional development. Mm-hmm. So I decided at that point that I need to not talk to my dad. And that was so hard on me. It made space. It didn't do anything, though. We still have the same problems. Mm. I just got away from him. I got to get clear-headed. He wrote letter after letter, but I didn't get any of them.
What do you mean you didn't get any of them?
I didn't get them until I graduated the program.
Oh.
My mom took him off the list. Like, no more.
Oh, damn.
And I don't think she told him. She wanted me to tell him. Oh. So I think that they made me do that in the program. A very big, like, you're going to assert
but your boundary. Told your mom to take him off the list?
No, I think my mom did that.
Okay.
I think she just did that because I know I have all the letters in a stack that I didn't get. They're in this bag at home. And I had no contact with him. And then I really grew. I did. I really was able to focus on Rhea and all the flaws I had. Like, I had some major flaws.
Yeah.
Like, personality flaws that just needed to be fixed. This sounds kind of weird, but I'm just going to say it. Life was smooth.
Yeah.
Life became very smooth. I wouldn't call it easy.
Right.
Just anything that came my way, I had tools. I knew what to do.
Now talking about after you're done with the program and you're out. Okay. Where did you come out to and, like, where did you settle down?
When I graduated the program, I lived in the Campbell House around the corner from Christine. I was sober.
Yeah.
Very sober and very committed. No alcohol, no nothing. And I started going to AA meetings, which made no sense because I'm not an alcoholic at all. And I had to learn that. I went to AA meetings. They're great, by the way. Any meeting, I encourage anyone to check out, whether it's Al-Anon, which I'm guilty of going to still, or a codependency class. The principles of that group, I think everyone should learn. Mm-hmm. Not necessarily practice. I think everyone should learn them. I met friends that were not good friends, to be honest. In your program? No, my program friends were amazing. Al-Anon, they call the program too. About
the friends from boarding school.
I have the most amazing connections with the girls from boarding school. We all stay in touch.
Yeah.
No matter where we are at in life.
Yeah.
We will even help the other. We had a girl that was unfortunately kidnapped and men had shaved her head.
What?
Post a video of her in Oakland. Me and these girls went, like all of us. Some people flew to find her.
Wow.
Like, we're a very got you group. We've been through so much without even having to talk.
Yeah.
Yeah, we don't really talk that much, but we know everything about each other.
Yeah.
Like, I know the way they sit and the way they eat.
Right.
I know when they're lying.
Yeah.
Yeah, like, all kinds of stuff.
Damn.
So we can't hide from each other. It's a really awesome relationship. I can't hide anything. They know what I'm feeling instantly.
Oh, that's so great.
It is great. It's been very, we all help each other to this day.
Look at you collecting all these sisters in your life.
Isn't that weird?
It's amazing.
I have sisters. I'm not an only child. Christine just pointed out something really beautiful. That's really cool. Mm. So then, okay, so I'm out of that this program. I'm entering AA. I'm not really fitting in.
Yeah.
I think they were really rude. I was there for getting help.
Yeah.
Maybe I didn't need the help that you needed.
Yeah.
But fuck you for not offering me help.
Yeah.
That just really hurt at that time without having the knowledge. Yeah. Yeah. Like, I was in school. I did get confronted with some of my issues right away. I handled them really well.
Okay.
I had tools at the time. Like, right now, I feel like in my 30s, I've lost some of the tools because I feel like I'm at a new chapter.
Yeah.
So I need new tools.
Or channel back and tweak them a little, right?
Maybe channel back and tweak them. I think a lot of those rules from the program are very self-blaming. Yeah. They're very like you.
Oh.
And I think sometimes I'm not doing anything.
I've been reading The Subtle Art of Not Giving a Fuck. It's definitely about, you know, putting things on yourself. But it's not putting things on yourself in a way that, oh, this is my fault or this is my responsibility.
Right.
It's really literally just like, oh, this happened. Let's see how I'm going to deal with it now. Like, that's it. Or setting up a certain metric of happiness. So many people are like, okay, so once I have this, I'll be happy. Not thinking that. Thinking more along the lines of, for my own happiness, I will be honest with people forever. Yes. Right? You don't, there shouldn't ever be a timeline. It should be kind of a thing that you instill in yourself that measures your happiness. Because no matter what happens, if you are completely honest with your truth, you can't be upset about that.
That's true.
Yeah. Even if something shitty happens, and then you think about how you're going to deal with that. What happened, right? So it's, you have to set up the good metrics, healthy metrics.
Okay.
And then figure out how you deal with problems.
How to deal with problems.
Yeah, and I think those two things
I could read that.
Find happiness for you.
Okay.
So tell me, you're confronted with all these things.
I have lots to talk about in my pain and in my sadness. When I'm happy, I have nothing to talk about. Mm. I have noticed this in girls that like drama. I think I'm totally someone who feeds off drama. It's been my world.
Yeah.
I don't judge it. I don't make fun of me for it. It's just something I've noticed. Life was good. I did still struggle with this ongoing pattern, which is abusive men.
Yeah.
Abusive, cheating men, to be precise. This was a continuous pattern, which is why it was so frustrating. I attracted all the wrong ones, man, let me tell you.
Yeah.
I had an abusive relationship, a really abusive relationship. I will say at the time my dad was not sober and not doing well and did threaten suicide twice and hang up on me.
Oh, God.
So I was still dealing with shit. It's weird that I'm saying I wasn't. So what I'm trying to show you is like life was so good in all these other areas that I didn't focus on like the bad.
Yeah.
So my boyfriend at the time, I knew him before the program as well. I knew him through my ex-boyfriend. I wasn't in love with him at all. I was in love with the way he was in love with me. I liked that feeling.
Yeah.
He didn't like that feeling. And he became very abusive. And I, like I said, I talk abusive. I'm just not physical.
Okay.
So that's how that physical stuff started. I talk like I walk that walk.
Yeah.
I don't walk that walk, though.
Yeah.
He walked the walk.
Oh, no.
So I would talk shit, and then he would, like, the first thing that ever happened that was horrifying was he closed fist punched me in the face. So that moment in my life was horrifying because we had been together 2 years at that time and he had never done that. It was horrifying.
Shit.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So horrifying. And I didn't tell anybody. Nope. I was so proud of myself in all these ways. I thought if they knew that they would think I was doing bad.
Yeah.
And usually you're not supposed to keep secrets. So I was really afraid that I was keeping secrets.
Yeah.
I was afraid it was going to get worse. And it did. One day I did have welts. So those are like giant bruises all over the side of my legs. And that's when my best friend Nancy saw. And she asked me about it, and I told her. We've been best friends since kindergarten. She was the first person I told. I got out of that abusive situation eventually after 5 years.
How did you get – oh, my goodness. So he was abusive to you for 3 years?
He was abusive to me for 3 years and really bad. Yeah. And it just got worse, and it just – I couldn't tell anyone. I wanted to.
Well, when did you tell your friend, and did she keep it a secret?
She kept it a secret.
Oh, that's not good.
Ready for why?
Why?
I'm not getting out, dude. So go tattle me all you want. Like, I'm staying. Are you going to leave? That was her first question. And I was like, no. And then she was like, why? And I was like, I don't know. Why I wouldn't leave was that was all I knew.
And how old were you through this relationship?
17 until I was 22.
Okay.
So I think everything's my fault. I got myself into this. I need to get myself out. But that didn't help me leave. Help me leave was realizing they fucking lied to me. That's what made me leave.
When you say he was lying to you, what are you saying he's lying about?
Like that he's a good guy, that he will do good by you, that he will love me, that he's sorry.
Right. He would hit you and he'll say sorry.
That he was sorry, that he doesn't know what's wrong with him. He's going to go to counseling and then he doesn't go. When you're in those relationships, you blame yourself. How did I not see it?
Yeah.
You're so pathetic that you couldn't see this.
Yeah.
I felt a lot of shame. Like, I know this is bad, but then why am I here? That was, like, the whole issue. Yeah, I felt so shameful. Very slowly, I think I'm unraveling that it isn't my fault. That's what I was unraveling.
So what was that process like of getting out?
Really hard, because I did it alone. So it took longer. If I had gotten help, it would have maybe been faster.
Yeah.
I think I needed to do it on my own to trust myself. I don't think I had that before this moment. It felt very lonely a lot of the time. And like I journaled a lot about the real shit that was going on. So reading that journal was pretty sad.
Yeah.
Because I would tell the truth in it. And I would say like, oh, he totally hit me. Or he pushed me. Or he shoved me out the car. He dumped me on Valentine's Day.
He shoved you out of a car.
Shoved me. Not moving. Not a moving car. He was awful. Let me just state, he was a best friend of mine for 9 years.
Yeah.
It was so hard to leave him, even as like a friend. Like, I really had to decide, are we even not friends? Like, it was really hard. So I was really proud of myself during that time of my life. I felt like I overcame something on my own.
Yeah. What was your biggest support system? Because it seems like you really took most of it on your own.
I was about to say, there was no support with the thing.
Obviously, partially because you didn't tell anybody.
I didn't tell anybody. Yeah. Can I tell the reason why I didn't tell anyone? I didn't want everyone to hate him.
I'm shaking my head right now, right. By the way. You can't see it because this is a podcast, but I'm shaking my head.
I didn't want everyone to hate him. He was very popular with a lot of people, and I didn't want that. That's a very codependent issue.
And also, that could have prevented from his next victim to know not to get in the relationship with him. So That's a bummer.
Right. And I will say, after, I did tell everybody the whole story. Yeah. Like, I told my mom that weekend the whole story. Yeah. The welts. And she was like, oh, my God.
Yeah.
That's when she told me I'm her what for. And that broke her heart so bad because she thought she beat the cycle by taking me out of it.
Yeah.
And to hear that I'm in it, she now knows it's normal to me and I'm struggling. Yeah. We're still working through that, me and mommy.
Yeah. From that relationship, where do you go?
Then I do the thing you're not supposed to do, which is get in another relationship.
Yep.
I waited 3 months. I didn't get into the relationship right away.
Okay, 3 months. It's pretty right away.
I did. I liked this guy's attention. That's how I would describe it. It made me feel good about myself.
Yeah.
He was homeless, living in an RV. He had no socks.
Wow.
I have really low standards. Like I would never do that now. I look back and I'm like,
yeah.
My friends did make a lot of fun of me. He didn't have a job.
Yeah.
He was a loser in every form.
Damn.
In a nutshell, that relationship was a repeat. He never actually put hands on me. He just did a lot of put hands around me. He punched a hole in the wall and wiped his bloody hand on my face.
Oh, my God.
The day that this changed my life because the blood dried on my face. I lied to everybody about there being blood on my face, and everyone knew what happened that day. So, like, I tried to keep up a lie that didn't work.
Right.
And everyone was like, get the fuck away from him.
Yeah.
That relationship turned abusive. I blame myself. I thought it's all my fault. I'm creating this. Why do I keep creating this? How am I creating this? That keeps you in it.
Yeah.
It was a 3-year relationship, a little bit shorter. I will say the ending. He left me, the guy with no job, no money.
Wait, for 3 years he didn't have a job?
Nope. He sold weed. And shitty at that, he owes everybody I know money.
Oh, great. Okay.
He lived off me. I had my own house and we shared a room, but I paid for everything. Never made me dinner, never got me a birthday present. He was probably the worst boyfriend I've ever had. Yeah. I'm just saying it. Yeah.
Well,
in terms of boyfriend, like a guy to be nice to you sometimes, He was never nice.
Okay. Well, yeah.
He kept abusing me. I kept wanting his love.
Yeah.
The day we ended, he was extremely possessive. I need to state that all my boyfriends were cheaters and possessive, very possessive. They would always call me whores. They tell me I smile at every guy and I'm a whore daily.
Oh, God.
And I do smile at every guy. What they couldn't grasp was I'm just a smiley person. They
could not grasp that. Yeah, you smile at every girl, too.
Well, and it's right. I don't know how they missed it. I think that these men that I dated were very insecure men.
Yeah.
The day that we ended, I'm buying him dinner in a very sexy red dress at Safeway. We're going to go home and I'm going to cook it for him in the red dress. And he said that I was flirting with the Safeway clerk.
This is how
this fight started. So now we're fighting. He punches a hole in his bathroom door at his parents' house, which he has been exiled from for punching holes. He locks himself in the bathroom, tells me to leave his life.
Oh, good.
I do leave, but not willingly.
Hey.
He pushes me out. Turns the porch light off. So now I'm in the dark, trying to leave, or not really. To be between you and me, I really want to stay. Then he comes back out. I hear the door.
Yeah.
And he comes out to bring me the groceries
and
my clothes. But he throws them at me.
Oh, what a dick.
My friends let me text him once. This was the boundary. If he does not respond, you are done, Raya, Michelle. And my friends actually took my phone and got me a new phone. It was that bad.
Wow.
I never talked to him again.
Good.
After this point of my life, I still have this pattern of abusive cheaters. I'm mortified by this pattern. I was doing well in other areas. I supported myself in the Bay Area, not working in tech companies. I worked 4 to 5 jobs always. I moved on really fast. I finally felt like I wasn't with someone abusive.
Right.
I finally had someone who was really sweet to me. So I thought I beat that cycle. My boyfriend had a little bit of a drug problem. That became, you know, my new chapter.
Yeah.
When you're in it, you don't know the answers. Right. They're going to come to you later.
Yeah.
So I'm still growing and still learning a lot about this, but I did get out of the abusive pattern.
Yeah.
I am very proud of that.
Yeah.
He definitely showed me what I want, regardless if it's going to be him or not.
I like that.
Men do not define me. I know that.
Yeah.
I just am struggling with, maybe you know something in life, but it doesn't mean that you're doing it.
Mm-hmm.
You can be, you know, have all the knowledge in the world. Sometimes that doesn't mean you're going to use your power. I'm struggling with that still.
Yeah.
I took on my grandma and dad.
Yes.
And my grandma and dad were homeless in New York City in a shelter. I couldn't handle that. My grandma was 87 years old. I just thought that was wrong on every level. So I asked my roommate to leave, and she did. And I moved in my dad and grandma, which was one of the hardest things I've ever done in my life.
Yes. And how old were you then?
I was 27.
Okay. Yeah.
That's kind of why I haven't seen people in the last 3 years.
Yeah.
I've been dealing with a lot that no one would want to deal with. Mm-hmm. Trust that. And no, I don't want to bring anyone around it. And from that, I will tell you, I've learned this. Sometimes doing the right thing doesn't feel right.
Yeah.
It feels like shit.
Yeah.
No one tells you that.
But you heard it here. It'll feel like shit.
But you just do it anyway.
How's that going?
It's almost like 4 years since I've been doing this. Maybe I was 28, because I know that we're on like the 3.5 year mark.
Yeah.
And how's it going now? My grandma passed away back in April, which was a really big blessing, because mm-hmm. dealing with her near death with no money right. yeah. was so inhumane. If anyone right. needs help, I will help you navigate yeah. this system. Yes, it's not fair. I did learn that I might want to become a social worker, because I advocate so much for, you know, the mentally ill or the mentally disabled or people that just don't get a fair chance at life.
Yeah.
I advocate really well for them. So I learned that.
Yeah. And how's your dad doing?
My dad is in his own apartment, his own 2016 Honda. His is newer than mine, with a little lease. He makes $930 a month from the government, which does not pay for anything. Right now, I might be helping my dad a little bit, but I'm going to find a solution to that.
Yeah.
And he's doing really good in terms of, he has a roof over his head and a car, and I'm very grateful for that.
Yeah. And also talking about you having realized that you want to do social work, I want to talk about the kids you worked with in the past and now.
I've been a nanny for a really long time, since I was like 17. Age 21, I got my first like real full-time nanny job. I form these amazing real bonds with the children that is rooted in truth and no judgment. And this allows the kid to grow up in an environment where they feel very safe. And my work has grown. Like, yeah. people hear about what I do, or now I can say in layman's terms, you know, I work on the development of the child. So it's turned into its own thing.
Yeah.
Now I work with 4 foster kids that are a part of the foster care system, that I also work with social workers and therapists. Basically, I help troubled kids, any yeah. kind of trouble. They could be autistic, Asperger's. They could just be acting out because mommy and daddy weren't there.
Yeah.
Any spectrum, I got you. And mm-hmm. like, I don't judge. Because of my experiences, I think they've allowed me to really get the dark things that no one wants to understand.
Yeah.
I think that's really beautiful, actually. Like, I can understand some really intense stuff.
Yeah.
Yeah. And that we're all just human, and that hurt people, and that I want to help change that. So maybe social work could be the avenue for that. I'm still yeah. figuring that out. I want to be rich, too.
Yes, I'm with that. So at the moment, where would you say that you are in your journey? Are you in a good place?
Can I answer that honestly?
Yeah.
No. I'm in a better place than I was 3 years ago, so I know I'm growing. And I finally can say, I know I'm getting better. A year ago, I don't think I could have said that.
Yeah.
I am not in a good place. There are some things that I cannot control. And I really need to figure out what my solution is. I say this a lot. I'm in a state of unknown, mm-hmm. which is not a grounded state at all.
No.
You feel very flighty. You feel anxiety a lot. Constant worry. I will say that I've learned what to do with that. Surround yourself with people that are not pressuring you.
Yeah.
You need love, love, love. Light incense, light candles, oils, something to make the limbic system have a new trigger.
Yeah.
Burn sage. And bubble baths. Bubble baths, love yourself. That's how I have to yeah. be.
Mm-hmm.
Because I'm in such a state of not being proud of who I am. Mm. And it's an unknown state. Like, yeah. Is it my fault? Is it their fault? So I just have to, like, love myself through it. And you have to. Or you'll be your own worst enemy, and that's not good.
Yeah. What do you think is the biggest growth within yourself from your early 20s to now?
That's a good question. One of them is being more confident in anything. I feel like in your 20s, you walk around pretending like you're a grown-up, but you ain't no grown-up. Like, that's how it feels. 30s, I will say that I feel confident in the fact that I don't know anything.
Yeah. Amen.
Yes.
Amen.
And I'm okay with it. Like, yes. It's a comfort feeling.
Yeah.
Like, I'm good.
Because you don't have the pressure of knowing everything.
Oh, we're so good. Mitzvahs.
I love that. I really love that. Okay, so with that, jump into Ask Choi real quick before we get into closing questions.
Okay.
So here's the letter. Dear Christine, I need help figuring out how to approach a situation. I've known this girl since high school, and we've always been really good friends. We went to college pretty far away from each other, but always kept in touch and made sure we got together when we were both home. We were always playfully flirty, but we've always dated other people. She got out of a kind of long-term relationship about a year ago, and we've been spending a lot of time together now that we both live in the same area again. One night, we got drunk and made out and cuddled and slept next to each other.
Aww.
We still hang out a lot, but we haven't talked about what happened that night or if we have feelings for each other. After that night, I've been feeling like I might have feelings for her that I just never tapped into in the past. I definitely don't want to ruin our friendship, but what if we're meant to be together?
You have feelings, bro.
I don't, yeah. I also don't want to pass by this moment. What do I do? How do I approach the situation?
First of all, you are, what a sweet person.
So sweet.
That was really sweet. You definitely have feelings. I'm here to tell you.
Yeah. Totally.
Listen to the song You Got It Bad by Usher.
Okay, I mean, like, you guys cuddled?
Feelings.
Yeah, but I mean, like, I understand the fear.
Yeah.
Because that's like, they've been friends. I mean, so they're out of college. So if were friends since high school, the minimum having known each other would have been 5 years.
Oh, wow.
Right?
You will ruin the friendship. Or you will not. I would say take the risk.
Or you could date and still end up being friends after if it doesn't work out. Because sometimes you are just better as friends.
Ruining the friendship is a choice. Yes. You have choice in that.
If you act with honesty and respect towards each other, even if the relationship doesn't happen, you guys will be able to remain friends.
I second that. I say go for it.
But now, yeah, what is the approach? Should, I don't know. I mean, honestly, if you have a hard time expressing yourself in that situation verbally, writing her a letter might not be a bad idea because then you can gather your thoughts and start out by saying, hey, I don't know how this is going to come off for you, but I just thought I had to say something.
I like that. I think writing a letter is really awesome, the power of writing, because you get your feelings out with no judgment.
Yeah.
I second writing a letter.
And then, you know, a lot of times when you do it verbally, people like to talk, so they respond halfway, and then you have to keep changing how you feel, which is not really how you feel, because how you feel is what you were trying to say in the first place.
Right.
And a lot of times when somebody's like, oh, but I don't, and it's like, oh, no pressure. Like, okay, I can just leave, you know? I think it's so important for you to just be like, I don't know if you're in love with her or whatever, but it seems like you are. But like,
seems like,
hey,
you are.
I am in love with you. If you don't feel the same way, maybe we should take some time to like work on our friendship again. But for right now, I just needed you to know. Something like that, you have to say it. Otherwise, we'll just check it out and you'll never know and she'll never know. And that's not fair for you or her.
I agree with Christine. And you'll feel better getting that off your chest. And then you'd be surprised how people feel. You'd be surprised.
So there we go. That's our advice.
Yay.
And always remember, we're not professionals. So take it with a grain of salt.
It's for fun.
And love. Okay, so closing questions, Rhea.
Okay.
What brings you the most joy right now?
Being with my friends. Yeah. Any kind of girl time. Strangers even, like strange women.
Yeah.
Spending time with
strange
them.
Strange women.
Spending time with women. Yeah. Makes me really happy lately.
Awesome. Yeah. To somebody out there who might be going through similar hardships as you did in your past, what would you say to them and where would you recommend they start the healing process?
One is get a good therapist. And what I mean by that is if you're not feeling good when you leave the therapy appointment, that's a bad therapist. It doesn't mean they're bad at their career. It just means for you, it was not a fit. Also, give the therapy 5 sessions. I know that's a lot, but this is the effort you have to put in and the commitment you have to be about starting your journey. Number one, get a therapist. Number two, read and get friends. Don't give up. You hear that all the time, but here's why. Basically, in life, we're going to be hardworking mixed with perfect timing. If you give up, you're missing the opportunity of timing to come together with all your hard work. So that's why you don't give up. You will be okay as long as you don't give up.
I love that. Okay, well, little Miss Rhea, yes, we've been friends for a long time. And we've talked about a lot of things, but there was a lot of your life that I didn't know about. And this trip, we talked a lot about a lot of things that I didn't know about you. And it's so great to see how strong you are. I feel like just the way you act outwardly, it's just very bright. So then it's hard to know that you're having a hard time.
I know.
I think it's really extremely strong of you to say out loud, I am having a hard time. I'm struggling. And the fact that you verbalize that to your friends, I think is so important. And it means a lot to me that you share that with me. So I just wanted to say thank you for doing this, first of all, and being my friend.
Me too.
And I'm really proud of you.
Thanks.
And I can't wait to hear that your life gets brighter and happier. And I'm here for you.
Thank you.
So I love you.
I love you. I second all of that.
Okay, so that's it.
Thanks, Christine.
Love you.
Love you.
Okay, so that was my interview with Rhea. I'm sure you can tell from the interview that she's still dealing with some of the issues that she's faced in her past. And, you know, she'll be the first person to tell you that she is, in fact, still struggling. In my opinion, that makes her immensely strong. Being able to admit that you're a constant work in progress takes so much courage and self-reflection. I also want to touch on the fact that you're not required to be over your struggles to be in good mental health or in a good place. I believe that it's all in how you deal with them and being open about how it's affecting you. I am extremely thankful for Rhea's complete transparency during this interview and so proud of her for always being willing to take on her demons. You are not alone. We all have something. Difficulties come in different shapes and sizes for everyone, but I really want you to know that we are all in this together. Do not ever give up. Thank you again for joining me this week on Choices. Send in your Ask Choi questions to choicespodcast@gmail.com. Make sure you're following Choices on Instagram, Facebook, and Twitter. It's Choices Podcast, all one word for all three. Okay then, I will talk to you guys next week. Okay, thanks, bye!